You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight you're going to hear another one of the lectures from one of our many conferences. Which one doesn't make any difference. Those who attended will recognize it. The rest of you need to hear it. And this is one of my lectures, and it has to do with what this is all about, what this broadcast is all about, what this nation began to be all about. That's being destroyed today. What we all profess to care so much about. So make sure you have pen and paper and take copious notes, folks. You're going to need to refer to them from time to time. As you're going to hear, some of the people who attended the conference had many varying and widely different views on this subject, when we should have all understood it and been together on a definition. The title of the lecture is Freedom. And the reason we're doing this is we've had many, many requests to do a broadcast on freedom. Now, in the beginning, I'm going to be asking questions of the conference audience. You're not going to hear very well a lot of what they say, but just hang in there, because as soon as we go around the room and get all the answers from the audience, then we get heavy into the meat of the matter. So without further ado, we take you to one of our many conferences, to a lecture by me, William Cooper, on the subject of freedom.
To everything else that's going to follow this week. If you don't understand the subject of the next hour and a half to 2 hours before we break to eat supper, then you're not going to really understand anything else that follows. And I know that most of you don't need this, but it's an absolute requirement that we talk about it. We've got to. And that's freedom. There are so many people in this world who talk about freedom, but they haven't got the slightest concept of what they're talking about. For instance, I can ask anybody in any high school graduating class, in any high school in the nation, to define freedom for me. And I'll get some weird off-the-wall statement, well, it means freedom of speech. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means I can say anything I want. Does it? Does it really? What is freedom and what does it really mean? And why should we be so concerned about the meaning of that word? So that's going to be the subject of the next hour and a half to 2 hours. And I'm going to need some participation, some help from you. Because this is really important that you grasp the concept and the true meaning of the word freedom. Let's sort of go around the room. And folks, I'm not doing this to embarrass you. And there really isn't a right answer, as you're going to find out. Because the definition or the meaning of freedom is subjective. When we talk about society as a whole, it has an objective meaning. a real, definite meaning if you want to have a society that lives in peace with each other. But depending on who you are and where you're coming from and what your particular moral code is, or lack of moral code, or your system of ethics, if you will, your definition of freedom is going to be subjective. It's going to be based upon what you particularly have been taught to believe in your life. So I want to go around the room real quick, and I want everybody to give me just a quick, simple definition of freedom. Don't be embarrassed. I'm not going to use you an example or embarrass you or anything. I just want to get an idea, and I want you all to get an idea of the different concepts of the different people in this room, which represents probably a segment of the very best of the population that really wants to have a good future and live in freedom. Even amongst this group, you're going to find that there's going to be some different answers. Pat, you want to start off?
Well, I think to be able to do what I want to do without having to worry about, like, the license.
To do what you want to do without having to worry about somebody putting restrictions on you.
Yeah, you know, being a responsible person, that would not.
With responsibility.
Yeah, without infringing on
other people. Okay, without infringing on other people. Okay, Jean?
Answer, I would just say
one word,
choice.
Choice, okay. Principally the same as Pat, but you had choice.
Freedom is an extension of the word liberty.
Freedom is an extension of the word liberty. Now, this is interesting, because then to understand what he said, we have to define liberty. And if we don't, we really don't know what he said, do we? Next. Okay, so you think freedom is to be able to do whatever you want to do as long as it doesn't harm anybody else.
Yeah.
I got to repeat that because the camera can't hear and then the other people back there can't hear. Who's next? Real quick.
Freedom is a universal right for everyone to grow, develop as they choose.
Universal right for everyone to grow and develop as they choose. Next.
I think freedom is like,
so freedom to you means mind your own business, don't judge other people. He can do what he wants in his home, you can do what you want in yours. Next.
Freedom to do what you want to do without harming other people or other people's property.
Freedom is being able to do what you want to do without harming other people's person or property. Is that correct?
Right.
Next. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Make your own decisions, okay? Next. So you want to be able to make your own decisions, but participate in decisions that other people make that might affect you. Okay. Patty?
Freedom of choice.
Okay. Jay?
That would be somewhere between slavery and license.
Between slavery and license?
Yeah, it would be.
Okay. You did something similar to what he did. Now we have to define slavery and license before we really understand what he said. And if we don't.
It would be total control.
Pardon? Slavery is total control?
License would be total freedom without moral or ethical concern at all.
Okay, no restrictions whatsoever. No concerns either. Next.
I think it's being able to believe or read what it was, to own property, to keep profits from my work, freedom to do or not do things as long as you don't hurt the person or property of anyone else.
Okay. Do what you want to do, make the profit you want to make, engage in the occupation you want to engage in, read what you want to read, as long as you don't hurt the person or property of anybody else. Next. I didn't really hear all that you said.
Do you have a reason to be able to make one of them?
be able to do what you want to do without all kinds of rules and stuff, right? Sure. Yes.
The absence of controls placed upon majority by a minority.
The absence of controls placed upon majority by a minority.
Majority,
yeah. I think that's what I did. I say that right? Did I say what he said, guys? Okay. Up front. Hello?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Truth is essential to freedom. Okay.
Freedom in a nutshell is the responsibility and allowing persons the ability to make their own decisions and to allow them, I have the words all set out here, to do the, see, I lost this.
Well, that's okay. Can you sort of say it in a nutshell without?
Well, it's allowing someone else to have an opinion and allowing them to express their opinion and allowing them the freedom to say what they need to say and you the freedom to do what you have to say. Because without being able to express your opinion, you have no freedom.
Okay. Thank you. Next.
To be able to live where I want to live, participate in the type of activities or income earning situation that I choose to pursue, as long as it doesn't infringe upon the rights of anyone else.
Okay. Next.
Make all kinds of choices that you choose to make.
Rich?
Freedom is based in the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and property granted to us by the creators. I believe that those rights have to be protected, and as long as they are protected using our system, the constitutional republican type system of constitutional laws, as long as we don't hurt the property, the life and property of another, that's what we aspire to be as free people.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is that freedom to you is based upon the unalienable right to life, liberty, and property under the constitutional law that governs this country. Okay, next.
The opportunity to live as you want, believe as you want,
Live as you want, and live without fear. See, nobody else said that, did they? Next.
Mine is to be able to do the thing as long as you don't hurt anybody's property or person.
Do your own thing as long as you don't hurt anybody's person or property. Next.
I believe that freedom is a way of life whereby I am able to choose to deal with others as I have them to do. And also
I can hear you say the Decalogue, right? Yeah, that's the Decalogue. You all know those, you would have them do it either. Is that what you believe?
Sure.
Okay, next.
I believe it's the ability to choose a responsible way of life and to allow others to do the same without impeding or oppressing them.
Choose a responsible way of life without impeding on others, allow them to do the same. Irene?
I have a great disability that I think that you said
responsibility and ability to do whatever you wish as long as it doesn't infringe upon anybody else's right to do the same thing.
I found one word.
John?
Respect.
Respect, okay. John?
Right to defend myself.
Right to defend yourself, okay. Next.
Limited government without fear, the right of property and pursuit of happiness with responsibility.
Limited government without fear and the right of property. And what else did you say?
And liberty with responsibility.
And liberty with responsibility. Next.
Freedom is our being allowed to live and have our certain rights, most of which are, I guess, not spelled out in the Constitution. Ability to go out and engage in the pursuit of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. But then again, it can't work without the rule of law.
Okay. Pursuit of your rights as spelled out in the Constitution and live by the golden rule. Next.
Could be a state of mind, body, or spirit in which you recognize that God has given you rights which man cannot give you, and living to protect those rights for yourself and for others.
State of mind, body, or spirit, realizing that God gave you certain rights that he also gave others that you have to respect as mutually. Is that correct? Did I paraphrase what you said correctly? I don't want to put words in anybody's head. Respect the rights of others. Okay. If I get it wrong, correct me, because I want to make sure I say what you wanted to say. Next.
Right to pursue your dream.
Right to pursue your dream. Okay. Next.
The right to do what you want to do and not
okay, do what you want to do, not get hassled, and not hassled. That's pretty simple, huh? Next. So it's a state of mind, but you believe that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights define the limitations and the rights that you believe, if they were applied the way that they were written, would represent freedom to you. They help mine too. I got that.
Now, I believe freedom is like a gift from the Creator, and only through man does that gift infringed upon, taken away, regulated, where freedom is the ultimate gift from the Almighty, since you make responsible choices without hurting anyone else.
Okay, I think you said that pretty good, and I think that got on camera. Denise?
Ditto.
Is this the rush room? Do whatever you want as long as it doesn't interfere with anybody else. Okay, all the way in the back. Larry? Freedom. What's freedom to you? There's no right or wrong answer. Just live and let live. Okay, that's good. Travel wherever you want in pursuit of happiness. Bruce?
God-given rights
is what? Responsible exercise of God-given rights without infringing on anybody else's rights or their property. That's right. Diane, homecoming queen. This is a private joke between Diane and I. Diane and I are great friends that go back quite a ways, and she's helped us out an awful lot. So if you don't understand, leave it be. Yes, ma'am.
Well, among other things, I think it's the right to succeed or fail, even if your standard of success or failure is not the same standard everyone else.
To succeed or fail, even if your standard is not the same standard as everyone else's. Okay. Good. Dennis?
The right to homeschool our two sons if you see fit. And the right to live and breathe without asking anyone's assistance.
Homeschool your two sons the way you see fit, live and breathe without asking anyone's approval. Read them? Don't you dare say ditto.
I really like what Cal said. It seems to me that God put us here to live our life, and people restrict us. We're not able to prove what we're made of, what we're good
for. Okay, so you basically agree with what Cal said. God made you live your life, and if people restrict you, you can't live up to your expectations or potential, right? Next. You guys want to get into this? No one?
Sure.
Bob?
We have come to Christ. Freedom is free to do any kind you wish. But you also have to say that every time you free. So you get a problem. You get a bunch of free men who do anything you want. So we have to agree on something. We have to agree. But yes, I want to do anything. It's like common law is common law. Two basic principles. Anything we want except for, do not encroach upon another person or his property. All tort laws, criminal laws, common law criminal laws, and common law tort laws, all based on that basic premise. Second one, do everything that you honestly and openly agree to or promise to yourself. All common law contract laws are based upon that. So you have the two, he's coming down. Now, we all want the same freedom. All we want to find what we want to do. The only trouble is when we start hurting each other, it don't work. If I'm a king, I start hurting another king, the other kings are going to catch. They're going to come at me. So I have to be nice. In other words, we can do anything we want as long as what they have said are allowed.
Okay.
Not hurt us or encroach on another person's property and do everything you honestly promise to do. You still have any trouble.
Good. Well, basically what he said is don't encroach upon other people and their property, and do everything that you have promised to do. And, you know, it would be a much better world if people just did just that one thing.
Don't do it. You can hold the keys and talk
on. Who's next?
Are you going to talk about the ability to believe what you wish to believe, to be who you wish to be, so long as you do not infringe upon those same rights as other people?
Believe what you want to believe, be what you want to be, as long as you don't infringe upon those same rights as other people. Next. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I believe freedom is a gift from our Creator.
Basically, what you're saying is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Is that correct? Okay. Next. God-given right that no man or anybody else can take away from anyone. Gentlemen, have two representatives here from XL who I invited to come and see what we do. They'll be here for a couple hours, I think. This is Nolan Udall, who's a neighbor of mine and a good friend. What's your definition of freedom, Nolan?
Well, to me, freedom is the ability and the right to be able to dream and to seek to accomplish those dreams without interference from others within parameters that we have to be able to accomplish what I want and to help others along the way.
To be able to dream and accomplish those dreams and without. And help other people without stepping on anybody along the way. Is that basically?
Right. I just want to be safe from the good guys.
You want to be what?
Safe from the good guys.
Safe from the good guys.
I just want to have that freedom to be what I want to be and do what I
want. Safe from the good guys, have the freedom to be what he wants to be and do what he wants to do. That's a, I've never heard that before. Be saved from the good guys. But isn't that, yeah. But isn't that what they really believe about themselves? They believe they're doing what's best for all humanity, even if they're doing bad. And they rationalize their actions, the end justifies the means. If we gotta make a better world by killing everybody in this barn today, it's okay to do it. So, you know, basically what he said is right on the money.
Carl.
Saved from the good guys. Carl, where are you? Carl, what's your definition of freedom?
I think it's basically what everybody else is.
Most of them are
anybody else.
Carl, you know better. You can't cop out at my school. Stand up and tell me what you really think freedom is.
You know, freedom is everything to me.
Okay.
Everything. I'm not hurting my folks and anybody else.
Wonderful. Okay. Carl, freedom is everything to him, as long as he's not encroaching on anybody else. Yes, sir?
I freedom is a gift you give to others.
Freedom is a gift you give to others. That's very good. Okay, now, the point I wanted to make by this is not pinpoint anybody and say, you're wrong and you're right. What I wanted to, for everybody to see, is even in this group, that's a pretty sophisticated group when you're talking about freedom, there's some pretty different answers in this room, isn't there? Yes, sir?
Maybe no responsibility is... If you have no responsibility, you're in an institution, and you have no freedom. With no freedom, you're in an institution and no liberty. On the other side, if you have total responsibility, then you have total freedom. So responsibility goes with freedom.
Okay. Now let's explore this from a real world point of view. Let's look at freedom. Now let's look at it every way we possibly can, because I think by applying it to the real world, we can pretty much come to a real definition of freedom that everybody in this room can agree upon. Now the reason that this has to be done is you look out across this country, you read this newspaper as compared to this newspaper over here, you listen to Ted Koppel, Dan Rather, you listen to a Sunday morning evangelist, you listen to somebody who's a spokesperson for some group that calls itself a militia. You listen to another group that says they are the constitutional rights activists of America. You listen to the Greenpeace people. And what you find is they're all trying to practice a form of freedom that only they understand. Okay? So unless we all agree upon a definition of freedom, and we find out what that is by applying it to the real world, then we really can't talk about freedom. And when we say, you know, they're encroaching upon our freedom, who are we talking about? The Greenpeace people? The Christians? The Mormon Church? The Catholic Church? The Baptists? Are we talking about the atheists? I mean, what are we talking about when we say they're encroaching on our freedom? And who is that? Okay, if we can start with one premise, we have to have a premise before we start, that the Founding Fathers came to this country to escape religious persecution in the old world. Would everybody agree with on that? Is that pretty much a true statement? And part of the great battle of building this country was people striving for religious freedom. The Founding Fathers came from the old world to this country to escape religious persecution and then set up religious persecution of their own in the colonies?
Correct.
Right? And then people striving for their own religious religious freedom were persecuted by the people who came here to escape from religious persecution? And isn't it still going on today?
Of course.
What happened to the Branch Davidians?
Murdered.
Did they have freedom?
Yeah.
Why were they so vilified? Because they practiced a religion that was strange to everybody else. So freedom has its roots basically connected to religion, doesn't it? Or, if you want to put it another way, escape from some religions. Okay, at least in the beginning. You see, in the beginning, freedom was a concept that was strange to the world. Strange to the world. And we find that all through the history of the world, no matter which civilization you're talking about, you'll find books that say that the Roman civilization or the Roman society was a democracy where everyone was free. Is that true? You can accept that or reject it, but when you actually examine the history of the Roman Empire, you find that there was an elite group of people known as the original citizens of the city of Rome, who were the only ones who were free and could participate in government. If you didn't belong to that particular group of people, no matter where you lived in the Roman Empire, you weren't really free, were you? Were those people really free? Even the elite who belonged to that select group that were the original citizens who set up the empire, the families, were they really free? Did the government of Rome recognize unalienable rights endowed upon individuals by their creator? No. So freedom was something that was granted by the state. It could be taken away by the state. It was a capricious will of the Senate that said whether you were free or not and how free you were. Is that correct? In the Greek civilization, were the people free? No. Not on your life. Throughout the history of the world, folks, if you really study the history and you don't get caught up in all of these idealistic, philosophical questions, but look at the reality of the time, you'll see that no people on the face of this earth ever were free until this country was founded. And what was the premise that made people free in this country that had never existed before in the history of the world? What is it?
Unalienable rights.
So something has to go before that.
Property rights of God.
There is a God. Without God, there are no unalienable creator endowed rights. So if you reject God, already you've rejected freedom. Because God says you have unalienable rights. If God is the ultimate authority in the universe, who can take those rights away from you?
No one.
No one. Period. No one. That's the premise upon which this nation was founded. One, there's a God. Whether you believe in God or not, it doesn't make any difference. Our founding fathers said, for this to work, there must be a higher law that man must answer to. Otherwise, liberty and freedom is at the capricious will of whoever rules, whoever's in office. Therefore, there is a God. Without that, there is nothing else. I've said it on my radio show many times. How many of you heard me say this before? Whether you believe in God or not, you better start if you want to be free. How many of you heard me say that? How many times? About a half a million? That's the truth, isn't it? You see, man, if he doesn't have to answer to a higher authority, is subjective in everything that he does, isn't it? Where does moral law come from? That's from God. Without God, there can be no moral law. Everything else is subjective. Now, I'm not telling you, you have to believe in God. I'm giving you the lesson of freedom as it was created by the founders of this country and as it existed for the first time in the history of the world with the creation of the United States of America. You know me, I'm a strict constitutionalist. I believe that you have the right to believe in whatever you want to believe. And I'll fight for your right to do that. I'll even die for your right to do that. Even if you believe in Satan. Or if you believe in nothing. Or if you believe that you got to chop down 6 trees a day to worship your God. I'll fight and die for your right to do that. And I'll do it the first moment that I'm called upon to do it. Without hesitation. Because I know that I have to do that in order for me to be free. Now that's a strange concept, isn't it? I can't be free unless I'm willing to die for your right to be something that I might hate. How many people really understand that concept? How many people out there in the world do you think really understand that concept? Not too many. But that's exactly what this country was founded upon. The founding fathers knew that they had to create a nation that recognized unalienable rights granted to each individual by his or her creator. Only by doing that, they took the capricious will away from the man leaders and said, hey, you can't touch this area because you haven't got the authority to do so. They established a limited government with limited powers. They did not establish a democracy. They established a constitutional republic. Part of the effort to destroy this country is to convince you that it's a democracy. Why do you think they want you to believe that this is a democracy if it's not? Why is that so important to these people? Rich.
The government, you could end up with a man-made government. You don't need the unalienable rights if you can depend on...
You don't need God, you don't need unalienable rights, all you need is a majority vote, right?
The mob, man.
Yeah. Now, V.I. Lenin, the founder of the Soviet Union, said, democracy is indispensable to socialism. Because they know that the majority will always ultimately vote themselves everything. Everything. Which ultimately becomes communism. Okay? So one of the first steps of destroying freedom is to destroy a constitutional republic by convincing you that it's really a democracy. And then once you're convinced of that, you will make it happen. And you will slide into socialism and ultimately into enslavement under communism. And that's what's happening in this country today. So freedom, basically, based upon the reality of the history of the world, depends upon whether or not you believe in God. If you believe in God, you believe that God gave man unalienable rights. What's unalienable mean? It comes from the root word lien. Cannot be leaned against. Now, you hear people say all the time, inalienable. What does inalienable mean? It means you can be leaned. See, they're trying to fool you. Where is the definition spelled out? Where is the precedent set for which word you use? The Declaration of Independence. Read the Declaration of Independence. That is the first document at law in this country. The very first. As a nation. There are documents that have effects that go back farther. But the first document and law in this country is the Declaration of Independence, which says that man was endowed by his Creator with unalienable rights. Is that correct? So how come every time you see somebody on television or somewhere else, they're talking about inalienable rights? Because if they convince you that that's true and you use the word inalienable, what you're saying is your rights can be leaned against and taken away. The correct word is unalienable. It cannot be leaned against. Cannot be taken away. No one has the authority to do it. So by the clever use of words, they trick you into giving up your freedom. First, there must be a God. Second, God must have granted man certain unalienable rights which can never be taken away. And third, the Constitutional Republic is set up to protect, recognize and protect those rights. Those rights define freedom, limit government, and define freedom. And basically, what they set up was a place where people could live and do and flourish and reach the ultimate of their capabilities as long as they didn't hurt the person or property of any other human being. Now, it was flawed in the beginning, because here was the nation that first set man free in the entire history of the world and said, there's a God, and God gave man unalienable rights, and at the same time turned around and said, this man's my slave. But it's that same document that allowed those slaves to ultimately be set free and granted the same privileges and rights, because there are some privileges connected with this, as every other person, or every other living human. We have to be careful with that word person, though. Okay? Would everybody agree with what I just said?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, there was a lot of different definitions here, and there were some that connected freedom to the Creator, and some that did not, and some that went this way, and some that went that way. Basically, every one of you got it right in some aspect. But you've got to understand this. Even though the Founding Fathers said there is a God who is endowed upon man certain unalienable rights which can never be taken away, and created a Constitution and a Bill of Rights that recognized that fact and protected those rights, what is your ultimate freedom or imprisonment or enslavement depend upon?
Your will to defend it.
Who said the will to defend it? Because that's the right answer. The will, and more than the will, the resolve to defend it. Because governments change. Bureaucrats come and go. Men are elected and leave office all the time, don't they? And what is the ultimate character of the government? It's the character of the men who occupy the offices within that government. That's why in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights you will not see any reference to God anywhere, or Jesus Christ, or any other religious entity of any church whatsoever. Because they set the government up to recognize one thing only. There's a God, and God endowed man with unalienable rights. This Constitution recognizes those rights and protects them and limits government. Even though God is not mentioned in there, it is implied through the writings and the actions and the intents of the framers of the Constitution. But they were very careful to establish a secular government, which, because of the religion of the early enforcers of this government, occupiers of government office, bureaucrats, presidents, vice presidents, senators, representatives, the government reflected the morals and the ethics of the Christian community. But was the government itself Christian?
No.
The government never went to church, did it? The government didn't say prayers, did it? But the men who occupied the offices did. Now, if you understand that fact, you might understand now why things are changing. Are the people who occupy the offices of government now Christian? Are they, for the most part, Mormon? Are they Buddhist? What are they?
Secular
humans. They're atheists, aren't they? So, the reason you're seeing the government and the application of government taking the changes and doing the things that it is doing is because government always reflects the morals, or lack thereof, and the ethics and the beliefs and the attitudes of the men and women who occupy the offices of government. If these people have no moral code and no ethical code, they have no restraints, everything becomes subjective. Doesn't it? Subjective is dangerous. Because in my subjective viewpoint, you might be expendable, and I really don't care what you think about it. I'm in charge. And I don't care what that 200-year-old document that those old doddering old men wrote who didn't understand the modern complexities of the new age wrote. You're out of here, bud. Haul him off and chop his head off. That's what happened. So, folks, when we talk about freedom, these are the elementary things that we have to understand. Freedom did not exist for the common man in this world ever in the history of the world until this nation was created. And the only reason the common man became free is because the Founding Fathers said, there's a God. That God endowed upon man certain unalienable rights that no one can take away. And we have set up a government and a constitution and a Bill of Rights that recognize this and protect those rights and limit the power of government so that our posterity may enjoy this freedom. What's the difference? Well, let me ask you this. Is liberty freedom?
No, no.
Why? People are always talking about liberty when they should be talking about freedom.
Freedom is too much, and restrictions is too much. Liberty is somewhere in between.
Is that correct?
Liberty is within guidelines.
When I was in the Navy, I had to stay on board the ship unless the captain granted liberty.
Liberty's granted by a man. Realistic.
Liberty is a privilege granted by whoever's in charge. So when you're talking about freedom, don't get it mixed up with liberty. Liberty is good. We should give people as much liberty as we possibly can. If they can handle that liberty and they're not going to hurt anybody else by giving them some more other than what they have as the freedom that they've been granted by their Creator and respected and honored and protected by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, why can't we give them some liberty? We can, can't we? Sure we can. And that's good, but it is not the same as freedom, is it? See, I was free before I joined the Navy. When I joined the Navy, I got liberty. Okay? Does everybody understand the difference? And you don't really begin to appreciate that until you're in something like the Navy. And if you're a low man on the totem pole, you still may not appreciate it. I didn't really appreciate it until I was made a patrol boat captain in Vietnam and given a crew and given this patrol boat that cost probably $1 million and all these weapons that I could have destroyed any place I wanted to with, and I was responsible for these men. Then I understood why there had to be liberty instead of freedom on that boat. Because if I gave those guys freedom instead of liberty, I might have been on patrol by myself. And things might not have worked. See, in his freedom, the gunner's mate may have decided not to clean the guns. But in my saying, you can't have liberty until the guns are cleaned, I made sure that it got done. So liberty is sort of a judicious responsibility. If you're not a despot. If you're a despot, you can turn liberty into something horrible, can't you? Something promised and never granted. Who saw Mr. Roberts? I'm glad when I was in the Navy, I wasn't on that ship. Because those guys didn't have any freedom, and they never had any liberty. And the only time they ever had any liberty, all hell broke loose. It was sort of a lesson in what can happen if you restrict the population too much. When they finally went on the beach, what did they do? They tore the hell out of everything. And let Mr. Roberts hold them back. Because he was the good guy, always sticking up for him, right? Okay, have we sort of clarified that word, freedom? Does anybody in here have any questions? Because if you do, if you think I'm wrong, if you want to explore this a little more, we can do that. Yes, sir.
I don't know if I can get to the scripture for this or not, but there's a concept of doctrine that's slightly revealed in the letters to the churches about Nicolaitanism that's generally not understood by anybody. And it's all about freedom and about liberty. Right there, it's a capitalist, and every man is a capitalist, far enough. Every man is a captive. So what boils down to Nicolaitanism, that permeates all civilization. It's the very basis of civilization. That word is a transliteration of a Greek word, Nicolaitanism. Two words put together, destroy those people. It was the religious realm that's the distinction between clergy and laity. And it's in everything. It's in government, it's in business, it's in commerce. And that's the thing, that's the attitude that says that if you have to pay your dues to history, I mean, totally. You have to pay your dues, you have to brainwash the belief of this, and then after you pay your dues with a teacher or a degree or whatever, then you're better than those numbers.
a part of that. I don't think that's what's wrong with the world, but I could be wrong. What I think is wrong with the world is man is flawed. Man is flawed. You see, when I finally recognized that in myself and in others, I determined I don't ever want to be a king. Because if I'm a king, I may get the power that will tempt me to be despotic to my fellow man, and I don't ever want to be that. See, I've learned something in my life. You can talk about the devil and Satan all you want to, or any kind of aspect of this evil entity, Typhon, Set, I don't care what you call it. All you want to. But you see, I have a tendency to look at the real world. And I have a tendency to test philosophy just like I would test anything else. If it doesn't stand up in the real world, it goes out. It goes out of my life. And what I found out in the real world is this. If you take man completely out of an area, evil ceases to dwell there. The laws of nature operate flawlessly the way God intended them to operate. If you put man into that picture, you bring evil into that picture, because evil dwells in the heart of man and nowhere else. And that's where evil must be confronted and controlled. And good people confront evil within themselves on a daily basis and come out victorious if they're lucky and if they're diligent. And even the best people are hiding some skeletons in their closet because somewhere along the line they gave in to temptation and committed some evil act, either against themselves or someone else. The best people in the world, I don't care who they are, have some of those skeletons in their closet because they're human beings. And when they stand in front of me and tell me that they don't, I know I'm talking to a liar. Same when I meet a couple that tells me they never argue. I'm talking to two liars. Somebody tells me their children never lie. Oh, brother, that's a real big lie. And that's probably why their children don't lie. You know what I'm talking about? They taught their children to lie by lying like that. The real world, if you look at it, will point you in the right direction. Always. When you get off these flights of fancy and all this kind of namby-pamby good stuff and niddly-diddly, airy flight philosophy crap, you're going to get lost. Stick to the real world. Test what's right and what's wrong in the real world, and you'll be pointed in the right direction. And that's the truth. How many people do you know that say, I don't have to get involved in real world things? I'm going to be raptured. How many people do you know that say that? What kind of people would allow evil to prevail without confronting it and battling evil when they have children or grandchildren? And they know that if they don't confront this and defeat it, their children will be subject to it. What kind of people are those people?
No will.
No, the truth is they're escapists. They're escaping from the problem and having to confront the problem and solve the problem by convincing themselves or rationalizing or subscribing to a belief that someone else teaches that says it's okay for you not to be responsible. You see, it's a human thing for people to fall into that because we spend a good 20 years of our life trying to get to a position where we can be responsible. Leave home, sign contracts, get out of the real world, make our mark. And then when we find out how tough it is, most people spend the rest of their life trying to find somebody that will relieve them of their responsibility and take care of them. And that is the big attraction of socialism. That's what socialism says to you. I will take away the responsibility that you have. I will put it on my shoulders. The state will assume that responsibility. Yeah, you have to give up your rights and liberties and freedoms. You have to do what we say. But we're going to take care of you. We'll change your diaper. We'll give you a job. We'll give you an income. We'll even tell you what job you're going to have, and we'll give you that job, and we'll furnish you with recreation and all kinds of stuff, and we'll take care of your medical bills. And a lot of people find that very attractive. because it says, I don't have to be an adult anymore. I don't have to be responsible. I don't have to look at the problems or solve them. All I have to do is go along to get along. Right? If I went and talked to my father, who had been an Air Force officer all his life, retired as a colonel, he was a pilot. And I was weird on Air Force bases all over the world. I looked up to my dad, I thought, my dad is defending freedom. He's defending the Constitution, he's fighting for the underprivileged of the world. My dad is a big hero. Then he retired. And I went to recruit my dad to help me in what I'm doing. I said, Dad, you gotta help me. I mean, you bring a lot of credibility with you. When you stand up and you talk, having, you know, done what you've done and being who you are, people are going to listen to you. You could really be a great help in our crusade to keep this country on the right track. My dad said, son, I've known about this all my life, but I can't help you because I get a retirement check from the government, and if I help you, they might take this check away and it's all your mother and I have. You know, it hurt me deeply, but I told my father goodbye, and I've never been back. Because my father betrayed me and my children. He sold out for a measly $1,500 a month. You see, freedom of my children, his grandchildren, you can't put a price on for me. The government could come tomorrow and offer me $500 million and I'd spit in their eye before I would sell the freedom of my children and my grandchildren. So I still love my father, don't get me wrong, but I can't go talk to my father anymore because he sold my children. Gee. Okay? And he did it because he's a human being, and human beings are weak. My father has a brain. He's one of the most intelligent men I've ever met in my life. He doesn't have to take that check. And even at his age, he could make a real good living doing anything that he decided to do because he's smart. But he decided to sell my children and me, his own children, my brother and sister, for that retirement check. And all of a sudden I realized my father was not defending the Constitution, was not defending freedom, was not standing up for the oppressed people of the world like I thought he was as a boy. He was not the hero that I saw him as. My father was sacrificing 20 years for that retirement check. That was his whole goal. And then I sat down and really looked at the military service, and it suddenly dawned on me. This is an indoctrination into socialism. And anyone who stays in the military for 20 years and gets a retirement check is a socialist. There's no doubt about it. If they weren't, how come the VFW and the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, which is the VFW, and the AMVETS and the Vietnam Veterans Association, how come they're not all up in arms against what's going on in this country? How come they're not up in arms against what's going on in this country? They've been bought and paid for. That's why. Bought and paid for. I went to the VFW once. I was going to join. Went for several days, and I found out that it's just a bunch of old guys sitting around getting drunk on beer and telling lies. How great they were when they were in service. Now, not all of them are like that, but that's generally what goes on in most VFW halls. And that's the truth. So I left and I've never been back. And they every once in a while would say, hey, you got to come down and join the VFW. I said, no thanks. If I want a beer, I'll go down to Safeway and buy a six pack and drink it home with my family. Thank you. And continue my work. And I won't tell no lies. Because by and large, from my experience of war, there aren't any heroes. War was not glorious. It was a big rush sometimes. That adrenaline can do strange things to your body and to your mind. But it was a terrible thing. And none of us ever ended up really fighting for what we thought we were fighting for anyway. And in the heat of battle, who are you really fighting for?
Yourself.
Yourself and your buddies.
You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This is the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
How do you think about getting yourself and your buddies out of there with an S in one piece? And that's the truth. That is the truth. It boils down to that. It's me and these four guys against the world. But we want to make ourselves feel good, don't we? So we invent all these other things that go along with it. If we really want to be honest, what we should be saying to ourselves is, we were silly, and we ought to make sure this never happens to our children. And if we got to fight a war, let's fight one last war for freedom. And let's make sure that our children never have to fight another war ever again. For anything. You get right down to it, folks. I'm as anti-war as anybody. But you try to take my freedom away, and I'll pick up a gun in a second. When I came back from Vietnam, I promised myself. I took an oath in my own mind that I would never, ever kill another living thing in this world. And I was an avid hunter before Vietnam. I haven't been hunting since then because I went on the ultimate hunt. There is no hunt. There is no hunt that can make me happy. Just sad. And no thrill of killing any animal or any person. But if you try to take my freedom away, that means you're going to take my freedom away and enslave my children. And for that, even though I hate to do it, I'll kill anyone who tries to do that. I believe this with my whole being. A man or woman without principles and ideals for which they are ready and willing to die at any given moment that they are called upon to do so are already dead and are of no use or consequence to anyone, not even themselves. You can keep only that which you are willing to go all the way for. And once your enemy senses that you're not willing to go all the way for, he'll take it away from you. Isn't that the truth? Didn't you learn that with the bully on the school ground? Isn't that a law of the universe? Isn't that true in business, in competition, in sports? If you're on a football team and you're not going to hit that guy with everything you've got in your body, you can bet your butt he's going to put you in the hospital in the very next play. Isn't that true? What makes you think it's not true in politics? In the world today? Why are people so eager to not understand the definition of freedom, profess to love it, and be so willing to give it up all at the same time? Can anybody answer that? I can't answer that. I struggle with that all the time. But that's what's happening, isn't it? Yes, sir. You're not. You really think that's the answer? That can only happen if you don't believe in God. Well, you may be right about that, but let me go a step further in that same direction. I know people who tell me that they're Christians. I'm a Christian. I'm a devout Christian. I believe in the Word. I believe in Jesus Christ. He's my Lord and Savior. But Bill, I can't help you because I'm afraid to die. I look them right in the eye and say, then you just lied to me. You can't possibly be afraid to die if you are a Christian. It is impossible. It is impossible. Cannot happen. If you tell me you're a Christian and you tell me you're afraid to die, or you demonstrate fear in the face of evil, you are not a Christian. You are lying to yourself and you are lying to me. Lying to me is forgivable. Lying to yourself is unforgivable. And I'm not saying you have to be a Christian. I'm saying that this is what's happening and it is incongruous. I'm a Christian. I'm up here because I'm not afraid to die. I'm on the radio because I'm not afraid to die. President Clinton called me the most dangerous radio host in America because I'm not afraid to die or go to prison or anything else. That is the first time he has been brought up. Yes, ma'am. Is it death that you're afraid of or the pain associated with it? You're talking about the pain. Okay. Irene is telling me that she's not afraid to die, but she's afraid of death. And I think what she's trying to say, she knows where she's going to go after she dies, and she's not afraid of that. What I think she's trying to say is that you dread the transition, the painful transition from life to where you're going to go after you die. Is that correct? A lot of people are afraid of pain. And I can tell you this, from my experience in war, there's nobody who can withstand pain. There's nobody who can be tortured and not talk. All these POWs that say they were tortured and they never talked, they're not telling you the truth. And that's why they take them to these intermediate places for debriefing and psychological evaluation and treatment before they're allowed to talk to the public, so that they will not go make admissions that the government doesn't want made. This is true, I can tell you absolutely, unequivocally, it's the truth. All POWs who were tortured talked. I know this because I was a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence, and I saw the reports. I helped brief the Admiral on homecoming POWs, and nobody can withstand pain to the point that they will not do whatever whoever's administering the pain wants them to do. So pain is a terrible thing. And it can cause you to do despicable things that you might condemn yourself for. You should not do that because no one can withstand pain to an ultimate point. No one can. Everyone can be broken. Pain can make you suffer. It can make you hurt. So I can understand why people would dread the transition from life to death if there is a tremendous amount of pain connected with that transition. But that's not being afraid to die. That's being human. That's understanding the nature of pain. But not all deaths are painful, are they? Yes, in the
back. I think that a lot of it is that it's personally not. They believe in any kind of afterlife, and they believe in Jesus Christ and what he's done on the cross for us. Then really what they're afraid of is to look at their own life.
Judgment?
And that is not, yes, judgment. And they don't want to make that commitment.
Yeah. If you say to me you're a Christian and you fear death, I say you're not a Christian. If you say to me you're a Christian and you fear judgment, I say that's very wise. very wise. I'm talking to a wise person. And probably that person will not have to fear that judgment because the fear of the judgment of God will cause them to lead a good life. You see, but a good person would never say they are beyond judgment. Am I helping anybody here? I hope so. I always help myself when I do this, believe it or not. It's the truth. Yes, Rich.
You know, when you talk about, like, they want to be a, like a leader or a king or whatever, I can understand what you're saying. But the way we view, I just want to say one thing. The consistent set of values that you have is me and a lot of us the mark of a leader. And because you can turn on that radio, if you miss 3 weeks or 3 months or a year, and you turn it on, and there you are. And the same value system that was there 3 years before is there 3 years later. And that, to me, I mean, I think that's why a lot of us are here. There's a leadership character in you that allows that, it's that consistency.
But you know what?
We draw strength from that consistency. Well, I do want to say this. I
understand what you're saying, and I thank you for that. It's not always easy to do that because I'm human like everybody else. But you see, I'm not a leader because I really want to be a leader. I'm not doing this because I want to be. I think you all know that. I'm doing it by default. Nobody else is doing it. And for my children to be free and be handed the heritage as the posterity of the founding fathers, I have to fight this battle. I can't turn my back on my children and walk away. I can't turn my back on you and walk away. I can't turn my back on America and walk away. I can't watch the only freedom ever given to humanity in the history of the world be destroyed and walk away. I cannot do that. I would much rather be doing a lot of other things. I'm a leader by default because evil prevails because good men do nothing. I don't want that ever said about me. I want my children to be able to look at me in the way I used to look at my father, always. I want them to say, you know, my dad was a human being, and sometimes maybe I didn't think that he did the right thing. Maybe he punished me once, and maybe I really didn't do it, but he thought I did. But he was a just, good man who fought for our freedom, and because of what he did, we have what we have now. Or if we don't have it, it wasn't because he let us down. That's what I want my children to remember about me. And I'm like Jeff, you know. If I think something ought to be done, I'm just going to go do it. I don't care what regulations they say. I don't care how they come after me. I don't care what they threaten me with. You know, I'll deal with the permits later. That's the way it is. Clinton decided I was the most dangerous radio host in America because I told the truth. I wouldn't knuckle under. So he sent the FBI after me. They couldn't find anything. They sent the IRS after me. Some of you have been visited by the IRS asking you all kinds of questions about me, huh? What did I do, Connie, when they came after me? I sued them, didn't I? Who's winning?
You are.
That's right. You see, I learned something in Vietnam. There is no defensible position that cannot be overrun. What is the best defense? Attack. Identify your enemy and attack. Attack and attack and attack. These are paper tigers. The law does not give them the authority that they are intimidating and threatening people into allowing them to get away with. But most people don't know that because they never crack a law book. I do. They started a criminal investigation on me. I sent them a letter. Please send me the written authority in the law or the delegation of authority given to anyone who allows them to conduct a criminal investigation on me other than that listed in the delegation of authority, and I listed it, which says that they can only conduct criminal investigations against foreigners who earn income in this country who are supposed to pay income tax. I'm a citizen of the United States of America. They have no authority to conduct a criminal investigation on me for income tax, which doesn't apply to me, because I'm not a foreigner making money in this country. And guess what? They can't produce it. Can't produce anything. And the judge has ordered them to do it, and they still can't do it. Now they're in contempt of court. So I filed a motion. Well, first they filed a motion to dismiss the judge's order.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's better. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll complete the rest of the broadcast with your calls. You can make whatever comments you wish about what you just heard. The number is 520-333-4578. And the outcome of what you just heard concerning our battle with the Internal Revenue Service, for those of you who don't know about it, is that we filed, I don't know how many, a lot. Lots and lots and lots of Freedom of Information Act requests over the year, asking them to produce, document their authority under the law to do what they do all the time to people. They can't. They never have. And they won't. And so we sued them, took them to court, and they would not produce it for the court. And in order to get out of it, in the only way that they knew how, instead of allowing the case to run its course, they would have lost. They knew it. They lied to a grand jury, obtained indictments against my wife and I, are against fictional people, spelled all with capital letters, which represents a trust, which in reality doesn't exist, and obtained warrants from a judge for our arrest. And we challenged their jurisdiction, published a long challenge to their jurisdiction with all the points in law, gave them 20 days to answer it. And the law says where jurisdiction is challenged, it must be addressed. Well, they defaulted. They did not address it. They did not prove jurisdiction. They didn't answer it. Nothing. They are in default. And according to the law, once it's published three times in a newspaper and as a public notice, and that public notices were given to them, which they did not answer, that it becomes presumed fact under the law. And we can act upon it as if it is fact, because their failure under the law to answer or address our challenge, our statement of fact, means that they can't, that they're admitting by default that we're right. And so it's sort of a standoff. They have not retracted the warrants, but neither have they sent anyone to arrest us. And we have told them that we will defend our rights and our freedoms if they do, with all means at our disposal, including but not limited to the force of arms, if necessary. The number is 520-333-4578. If you'd like to call in and discuss what you just heard for the last hour and 20 minutes. That's 520-333-4578. 877-878. We'll be taking it. Oh, boy. I forgot to turn that off, didn't I? Let me do that right now. Okay. Good evening. You're on the air. Hello? Well, whoever it was didn't want to talk. 520-333-4578 is the number. And we will, of course, take your call. Good evening. You're on the air. Well, it's another chicken plucker. Nothing but chicken pluckers tonight. 520-333-4578. That's two phone calls where the person who called would not speak. I wonder why. Gee. The number, once again, is 520-333-4578.
This is Captain Glenn Miller speaking for the Army Air Forces Training Command Orchestra, and we hope that you soldiers of the Allied Forces enjoy these V-discs that we're making just for you.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. It sounds like that maybe DOA is transmitting on top of the All I've Got's music, intro music, 40s music on you. Just came up about 3 minutes ago.
I'm playing that because...
Okay, I'm sorry. I was afraid it was DOA again.
No, I'm playing that. I was playing that.
I don't mind it if it's yours. If it's them, I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, what do you have to say about what you heard tonight?
Well, I didn't hear all of it. I've heard some of your programs in the past, and I've been listening to you for a number of years, but... It's more of the government trying to overstep and run over the sovereign. I don't know. It's all we can do is fight them on every front.
Well, it's not the government. That's a misconception.
Okay, true. It's a private corporation acting under color of being.
No, it's not even a private corporation acting under color. The government is the Constitution for the United States of America. And all of the lawful elements and agencies of government under it, which are adhering to its limitations, restrictions, and is respecting the rights of the individuals and obeying the law.
Right.
What is destroying this country are people within government who have an agenda to destroy it and bring about a one-world totalitarian socialist state, a humanitarian world.
Yeah. With them as the elite who know best for everybody else.
Well, they think they do. That's why they call it a humanitarian world. It's secular humanism with the goal of eliminating all existing religions other than theirs, and their religion is man is God. Yeah, that's right. And therefore, they don't have to answer to anything above themselves. So whoever is in power gets to decide what the rules are.
What is truth?
And that's dangerous. That means everything then becomes subjective, and there no longer is any objective rules subservient to a higher source.
Right. And so we have the rule of man rather than the rule of law.
Yeah. How would you like to be ruled by your neighbor? But how would you like to be ruled by your neighbor?
Not at all.
How about by your preacher?
No.
How about by your children?
Definitely not.
How about by Billy Graham?
No.
How about by Walt Disney?
Especially not.
No. You see, if there's a God and we have rules dictated by God that we all must follow, a higher source which we must answer to and cannot disobey, then we're in pretty safe hands. But if all of that is flushed down the toilet and all of a sudden Joe Smith becomes the king of the world and he gets to make the rules and we must follow whatever rules he makes because he also gets to decide the punishment for breaking his rules, isn't that a little scary?
Oh, certainly so. We have a monarchy instead of a republic.
Scares me to death. What if Bill Clinton could really have the power that he wishes he had?
Well, he believes that he can, accomplish that through his executive orders.
Yeah, he's trying, isn't he?
Certainly. Yeah, it's scary. I mean, in my perspective, I don't think we've had a president that was good for the last 80 or 100 years, as far as standing with the Constitution entirely.
Uh-huh.
So we've been on dangerous territory for a long time.
Have you ever heard a group of people in your life who profess to believe in freedom ever sit down and discuss what that really means in your whole life?
Oh, I've discussed it with friends myself, but, I'm sort of inclined toward the concept of do no harm to your neighbor and obey the laws of God.
Well, it all boils down to one thing, really. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Certainly.
Now, where does that come from? That's right. It comes from religion. Now, I'm not saying that one religion is the only religion. I'm not saying that other religions don't do good or can't do good. What I'm saying is without a higher source that man must answer to, we're going to be in big trouble. Isn't that what the Soviet Union was?
Of course.
Isn't that what Cuba is?
Certainly.
Yeah.
We're in deep trouble right now.
Yes, we are. And getting deeper all the time.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you think on the whole issue of the...
I need you to talk louder right off the bat.
I don't know what you think on the issue of what they're setting up for us as far as plans to eliminate the Red List, but I'm afraid it looks pretty close when they call the most recent operation Last Dance.
Well, that's kind of indicative and prophetic, isn't it?
Dance, folks. Not good.
Not good, no.
So, I don't know. We're on a narrow slice of time, I'm afraid.
Yes, we are. And it's getting narrower all the time. I've been warning people about this for years, and I can't understand why they wait until the last minute before they begin to take it seriously and then complain that they don't have time to get ready.
Yeah, well, I've been listening to your admonitions to prepare for a long time. In fact, I was preparing even before that because I looked at America and said, this looks like the fall of the Roman Empire. You know, we're a civilization going into gross immorality and it can't help but be judged at a point in time.
Going down the tubes on a roller coaster.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping that vision of George Washington may be valid, that at a point in time where, after some serious destruction that we finally can repent and turn back to God and bring it back you know, recover the nation. Let's hope.
Well, I think we can if there are enough good people who refuse to do nothing and will stand up and do whatever is necessary to restore constitutional Republican government. Not engage in revolution.
Right.
Not engage in overthrow of the government to establish some other kind of system, but to lawfully restore constitutional Republican government.
Adhering strictly to the Constitution.
Yes.
And letting everything else go.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm afraid we're in a really serious storm here.
Well, we're in for a bumpy ride, but if we're doing the right thing, if we're fighting on the side of right against the side of evil,
we can't lose and they can't win.
We can't lose no matter what.
Right.
If I die in that fight tomorrow morning, I have won and I am free.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when they serve the devil, there's no possibility of ever winning.
That's correct.
We have that hope, at least.
They will lose. And ultimately, they will find out that their whole philosophy was wrong, and they will condemn their souls to eternal damnation.
Yep, perdition. Yep, well.
They will just cease to exist. That's what happens. They will die and cease to exist.
Well, God bless you there, Bill, and appreciate your efforts in waking people up and informing them.
Well, God bless you, too, and thank you for calling.
Thank you, Bill.
I just can't understand. You know, I know a lot of people who say they believe in God who think that when they die, that's it. That can't be it. It's impossible. You see, folks, if all there was in the beginning was God, then everything in the universe that was created by God had to come from one source and one source only, because it was the only thing that existed, and that was God. God cannot die. You can only die if you reject God and cease to have that spark of God within you. We are all, everything that exists, a piece of God. God created everything that there is. God was the only thing that existed to create it from. Therefore, everything that exists in this entire universe, including people, are little pieces of God. Man cannot become God because no part can ever become equal to or greater than the whole. So all you people who think that you're going to become God someday, you are wrong. It will never happen. The best that you can hope for, which is the greatest thing that could ever happen, is that you return to the source from which you came. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm fine.
How's the weather out in Arizona?
Well, it was just a beautiful day. Sunshine and a little partly cloudy in the morning, but in the afternoon it cleared up and was really nice.
Well, you know, it's nice back here in central Missouri. I'm calling you from up here around Springfield, Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And, Bill, you know, about every year down here south of Springfield, they have a big shindig. The American Legion does at Branson, Missouri. I'm sure you've heard of it.
Yes, I have.
And they go all out, and they more or less honor World War II veterans, but they don't honor the Vietnam veterans or the Korean veterans like they should. And my own personal opinion is I think that the boys who fought in Korea and Vietnam were really the heroes because they were fighting communism. But down here it seems to me like we never let this thing die between Germany, England, and the United States.
You know what my opinion is?
I'm listening.
Who cares what they do?
It makes a difference when our young men get slighted and they mistreat them like they do, even around the veteran hospitals and everything else.
Well, you can't get slighted you should never be slighted by the veterans hospital, because the fact that you served and were injured in the line of duty entitles you to benefits at the Veterans Hospital, if you so desire to accept those benefits from Big Brother and give up a portion of your freedom, which is exactly what you do when you do those kinds of things. But you can't be slighted by the VFW unless somewhere in you there is a sense of insecurity that means you must be accepted by those clowns. And that's what they are, clowns. Why would you want to be or feel a need to be accepted by a bunch of clowns who are letting this country go down the tubes while they belong to an organization with an agenda, which is self-serving, and basically all they do is pay dues and sit around and brag about how good they were in the war and don't do anything else beyond that.
Well, Bill, I agree with you 100%, and that's why I'm not in the Vietnam, in the veterans or any of these organizations anymore, and I don't contribute to them for the very reason that you was talking about here tonight.
Well, good for you.
Now, one more question I want to ask you. Have you ever went to your library and got a book? It's called Our Glorious Century, and it's put out by Reader's Digest.
No, I don't think I've ever seen it.
Well, it's a very interesting book, and it's a silver-like book, but it says Our Glorious Century, and it takes you from the turn of the century up to 1994, I believe.
Uh-huh.
It's just full of pictures and captions and everything in it. I mean, it's a very interesting. But on page 77, it talks about the overthrow of Russia in 1917 by a gentleman by the name of Alexandria Krasinski, and it shows their pictures and everything in here. But what this book don't tell you, that Alexandria Krasinski was head of all of the Masonic lodges in Russia at the time, 42 lodges he was in charge of.
Yes.
And the ones who overthrew Russia and set it up so the Bolsheviks could go in there and do the slaughtering of the Christians.
Well, that's exactly correct.
And I certainly hope that some of your listeners and I will go down to their library and check this book out. It's got many interesting pictures and stuff in there,
yeah.
Especially how on the investigations in 1952 on communism. It'll really give you an enlightenment of what's taking place in this country. And another thing, I don't know whether you've ever read it or not. It's a book by Bill Still. It's called On the Horns of the Beast. Have you ever read that book?
William T. Still?
I believe it is.
No, I haven't read that book. I've read his other book, though, first one.
This book that he's put out, it's a pretty recent book. I'd say 5, 6, 7 years old. Mm-hmm. But the point is, it talks about how during this Lindley scam in the United States here out in Montana, I believe it, there was a big base out there, how the Washington, D.C. was shipping all of this stuff through this big base into Russia. But what this thing doesn't tell you that all of these guys that were shipping this stuff through there, especially nuclear fission material and everything, these were all Masons that were shipping it through there.
Sure. Well,
that's another book that a lot of patriotic Americans needs to get and read.
Their belief.
And incidentally,
whoa.
A lot of the material.
Whoa! This is my show.
Okay.
You don't take it over when I want to say something. You're going to have to let me say it.
Okay.
The belief of the Freemasons is that they cannot allow one side to totally win. There must be always a conflict going on.
Correct.
And out of these conflicts comes a social synthesis, eventually.
Yes.
You notice that of the major powers in the world, there's never any major confrontation between those major powers, ever. All the confrontations and all the wars are fought in third world nations. And there's never, ever any gain of territory by either side. This was agreed to at Yalta by the three major powers then who were called the Allies fighting for the New World Order, for the United Nations. In Russia, the reason that Stalin outlawed all of the secret societies and Masonic lodges is he knew exactly the source of revolution, and he knew that's the only way he could protect his dictatorship, and so he outlawed
them. Do you think he outlawed the Masonic order in Russia? After all, he was a Mason himself.
He absolutely outlawed it because he knew the source of revolution. He knew that if he would be overthrown, it would come from the secret lodges, from the secret societies. That's the only place where these seeds are sown and where these things can foment and become a reality without discovery by the government and being able to do away with them. The French Revolution was brought about by the same force. The Paupers Revolution, the Paupers Revolt in England was brought about by the lodges of the secret societies. And it's not just the Freemasonic Lodge. It's all of the sum total of the secret societies wherein, at the highest levels of their degrees, resides that group known as the Illuminati, which is the source of all revolution in the world.
Yes, I agree with you, but I'll tell you what, if more people would take the time to go get some of these books and read them, Bill, we'd be a lot better off than maybe in this country we could make a change. But as long as people don't read and let someone else tell them, it's never going to change in this country.
Well, that's true, but you have to understand that people are weak, and they're selfish, and they try to get away from doing as much work as possible. And one thing that they consider to be work is reading. So if it's not on videotape or on television, most people will never see it, will never hear it, will never know it.
Well,
and that's a reality. It doesn't do us any good to sit around and say, well, if they did this or if they did that or they should oughta. The fact is they don't and they ain't gonna.
Well, I tell you, I don't...
That's why we have our television project, and that's why we're going to give them what they will watch, television. We're going to give them videotapes.
That's true. I don't sit around. I make people aware of this thing. Because, you know, one person can only do so much. And fortunately, we have radio programs like yours, but we also
know
there is a bunch of these dudes on here right now that's strictly leading them down the wrong path.
Yep, but you got to understand, I'm only one person.
You're right.
And I got a family to feed. And I don't have time to do all this stuff. And I don't have the money.
Well, let's hope your fortune will rise a little bit. Maybe things will change. I think people are really waking up, though, because when you get out here and start talking, there's more people knows about what's going on than they used to, Bill.
Well, that's true.
But it's been nice talking to you.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
I appreciate your input. 520-333-4578. Folks, I want you to call, and I want you to say whatever you want, but I want you to have a discourse with me and with the audience. Don't call with the idea that you're going to take over the broadcast and just have a monologue that's going to last for 10 minutes, because I'm not going to allow it, not ever. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Bill. I caught part of your broadcast earlier. I didn't catch the beginning.
Do you have your radio on?
Yes, sir. I'll
turn it off.
Sure.
And then call me back. 520-333-4578 is the number. Y'all know better than that. When I hear that echo and the level of the caller is way down and I start getting feedback in these earphones, I got to let you go. You know, if you can't reach over and turn it off instantly, I got to let you go. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. This is Bob from New Jersey.
Hi, Bob.
I've been fighting a good piece with the IRS 3 or 4 years now. And I'm kind of holding my own.
Good for you.
But, it's a sad thing to say, but I believe that this country has turned its back on the good Lord, and we're going to go down no matter what happens.
Well, that's kind of a defeatist attitude, don't you think?
Well, not really, no. It's just that what we need, basically, is a good kick in the ass.
Well,
morally, we went down the tubes.
I'll tell you, if that's what you need, come on up to my house and bend over, and I'll be more than happy to give it to you.
No, I mean, I'm motivated.
If that'll get things started, I'll do it.
Okay.
Now, could you imagine if the Founding Fathers thought like that? You see, most of the people in the colonies were against the Revolution. They were solidly on the side of King George.
Yes, I understand that, but I think a little bit you're misunderstanding me. I want this country to survive. I want it to become the greatest country in the world like it used to be.
Then we have to do it.
But we've got to stop glossing all these things over and doing a patchwork kind of repair on the thing and rebuild it like it needs to be rebuilt. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you're absolutely correct. But most people, you see, are afraid of that. Scares them to death.
Most people want to watch TV and get a paycheck every week. And I know where I work. God forbid if anything threatens that paycheck. They'll do anything. They'll sell their mother to anybody just to make sure that paycheck still comes in.
I know.
Because we're going through cutbacks now, and it's like, whose throat can I cut next?
Yep.
And I can't live like that. I just got to put my hands in the good Lord and do the best I can.
Well, we must remember a couple of things. Number one, there must never be a revolution. It must be a restoration under the law.
Correct.
Number two, whoever fires the first shot loses.
Probably also correct.
I know absolutely it is correct. For instance, if they come up here and fire a shot to try to stop me from broadcasting or arrest my wife and I or to take our children away from us, we will be justified in doing whatever is necessary to defend ourselves against them. However, if they come up here and I fire the first shot or shoot one of them, guess what? They are justified in doing whatever they have to do to eliminate me. Now, I put myself in a position where they can't do anything without the whole town seeing it. And so they will fire the first shot. And once they do that, they will be so sorry.
Well, then they've opened themselves up for whatever price they have to pay.
Oh, they will pay a tremendous price, even if in the end they kill me and my whole family. They will pay a price that will haunt them forever. And that's what every American has to understand.
Well, I understand that. But
we have a right to defend ourselves against tyranny in whatever form it takes. And we must have the resolve to do it, and we must be willing to die for freedom.
But that's true also. But God willing, even in your case, with something like that...
I'm just using that as an example because everybody knows the situation I'm in.
Right, that's true. I get Veritas. I know the situation very well. But what I'm trying to say is I don't think the people in our community would allow another Waco to happen.
Don't bet on it. People like me and you and others of like mind will not allow it to happen. But most of the American sheeple will do nothing, just like they did when Waco happened. And when I was down there, and Linda Thompson was down there, and it was about four or five others of us of like mind, we were the only ones in the nation who gave a damn. The only ones.
I understand that, and the rhetoric I heard from most people was just the opposite. They should do something about it because
they're a bunch of religious wackos.
They're bad people, and they should just go in there and waste them.
Yeah, what I heard was they're just a bunch of religious wackos. They deserve what they get.
That's basically what was going through the American people's mind, yes.
Yeah. Boy, you know, it seems to me that the Mormon Church should have been the first ones down there en masse.
I would think so, yes.
Because of the persecution that they went through. They should have been defending the Branch Davidians, but they weren't. You know what they were thinking of? Well, if we go down and defend the Branch Davidians, then the government's going to come against us again. We won't do anything. Just like all the rest of them. And I'm not picking on the Mormon Church. I'm just using them as an example because they were really persecuted at one time.
Yes,
and
they were. They were driven from four or five different states.
Yeah, and they should never have allowed it to happen to any other religion. But they did.
Yes, they did because everyone's running scared.
A nation of cowards.
You know a funny thing? When I first started doing battle with the IRS, I sat down, I looked over all my documents, I decided what I knew to be the truth. I said a little prayer, and I said, Lord, can I do this? And he said, go for it. And I've been battling with him for 4 years, and it's like right now, I'm in your situation, basically. They're on their side of the fence, so I'm on my side of the fence.
The only thing that matters is that we're doing the right thing under the law, and they are practicing tyranny, coercion, and extortion.
This is true. Well, you have a good evening, Bill.
Thank you for your call.
I'll be talking to you.
520-333-4578 is the number. I hope that everybody got a good feeling for what freedom is all about tonight by listening to the first part of this broadcast. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello. This is Chuck from Atlanta.
Hi, Chuck. Welcome.
Yeah, there's some of the people out there that really aren't paying attention to what's going on. I did get that movie Panama Deception.
Yes, sir.
The most interesting part was at the end where they showed the people living in a hangar because their houses were destroyed and they had nothing to do with what even happened.
That's right.
But they didn't have enough brains to have the guns and to fight.
That's right. And they weren't just living in that hangar. That hangar was a concentration camp where they took all those poor people who had been whose homes and neighborhoods had been destroyed and were holding them prisoner in those hangars. They could not leave.
Yes, I noticed that because in one section of the tape that I got, the only reason that it got on tape was because that the people were in the hangar realized and they surrounded the news people.
Yeah.
Got the military to push back.
Yeah.
And the people need to realize if you yourself are not willing to fight and not willing to realize what the purpose of that gun is for, you're going to be sitting in a refugee camp.
That's right.
Which I think is the most disgusting thing in the world.
Wasn't it significant that there were none of Noriega's soldiers in prison? They were all civilians and all from the poorest neighborhoods of Panama, which the American military had totally destroyed. And they're holding these poor people prisoners, the ones that they didn't kill, prisoners in concentration camps.
Also, the people in the tape that I watched, they showed the military going around, breaking doors down, looking for people in, I don't know if you say, in society that were like teachers.
Yes.
Newspaper people.
Yes, and these were American troops.
Right. And that was our troops.
That was just a practice for what's coming here.
Right. And this is to those people out there to think that you're in a position that you're going to be saved. They killed those people.
Yes, they did.
Because those people let them come in, allowed them to have the power that they had, and then when the military did come in, they had to kill them so that they didn't rally the people up.
Yes. Absolutely correct. I wish all these Marxist dodo head college professors who think that they're going to have a good life when socialism takes over, I wish that they would study what happens when socialism really does take over. Reporters, members of the press, the intelligentsia, college professors, doctors, lawyers, they're the first ones assassinated.
Correct. That's what I seen in a movie, and I remember that from years ago. That's what Hitler did.
Yes.
Everybody that got him his power, he killed.
Yeah. Actually, assassination is a kind word. It means that, you know, something, you at least have a chance. They were executed is the correct term.
Yes. That and the mass graves, they had that on the tape that I watched that, you know, the military was hiding mass graves, said, oh, we didn't do this. And even that tape was, what, maybe 7, 8 years old? And the government, our government, the people that rented, they kept saying democracy, this and that. And that just, oh. You know, 6 years ago when I really didn't notice that they kept saying that in front of me, and then once it was brought up to my attention to notice, that's all they ever say, democracy. That isn't even in the Declaration of Independence. It isn't even in the Articles of Confederation or Constitution. That word doesn't even exist in any of the documentation.
That's right. That is absolutely correct. And if you'll read Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution for the United States of America, you'll see that the Constitution for the United States of America does not guarantee us a democracy. It guarantees us a republican form of government. It's in the Constitution. Read it.
Now, when you bring that up to people and then they see it and they're like, you're right. And it's like, well, they're just saying that. No, they know what they're doing. They're playing games with you.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't get to be in that position they're at without being stupid. They just kind of, you know, they're playing games with us. And, you know, when you really don't know, because I didn't know. And then once I started noticing what to pay attention to, then you just shake your head. I even talked to some people at work about the black helicopters, and they says, well, what are you worried about? I talked to guys that are ex-military, where I work, and they're like, I did that. I see you mean to tell me you flew over scraping the shingles on people's houses with your skids, and you didn't think there was anything wrong with that? And they said, no.
Well, they'll find out one day, and frankly, if they were very old, they're lying to you, because this is a new type of exercise that just started really in this decade.
Right. Well, they just started. They're usually 20 years ex-military, and they've been working for where I work for 6, 8 months.
Yeah.
So they may have been some of the guys that did that.
No, not if they're 20 years. Only young people fly those helicopters, and only young people engage in combat. Those older dudes sit in staff jobs somewhere.
Yes, you got to figure the older guy. When you get older, you should be in a different position than be flying around out there doing any of that wild stuff.
Yeah.
But, if you look, okay, I'll let you go and somebody else call.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Yeah, if you'll look who's participating in all of these exercises, folks, you won't see any people 40, 50 years old. You see a lot of young, gung-ho Nazi stormtrooper types that are chosen because they won't question orders, and they think they're doing the right thing. Little do they know. Good evening. You're on the air.
Mr. Cooper.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I want to first thank you for your website and all the research you've been doing. I really appreciate it. Very hard to get a lot of this information until you started getting it out there.
Yes, it is.
Well, I wanted to comment on or make a give you an observation that I made with regarding you're speaking about all this subjectivism. I'm a scientist. Actually, I'm a student in a combined degree program, medical school and graduate school. And one of the things that really turned me on to science was a professor who started the class by saying, to really begin to even do science, first you have to realize one thing, that part of what he's going to say and what he's going to be teaching as fact is in reality going to be wrong. And he says the problem is that he didn't know what part of it was going to be wrong, and he didn't even know how much of it was going to be wrong.
That's right.
But there are two important things implicit, or that implied, and what he said there. Number one is that there is an objective reality, an objective truth that is totally independent of what any of us think.
That's correct.
Whether anyone understands it or ever will, the reality is going to be the same, and the truth is going to be the same.
That's correct.
Number one, there's objective truth. And number two, the best way to understand that and to get to that is through humility. You have to say, well, I'm very limited in my ability to understand the truth.
Yeah.
And those are that's the fundamental epistemology of Christianity, basically.
That's true. And we're out of time.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling.
All right. Good luck.
And thank you an awful lot for your comments. That's it, folks. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
Give him credit for it.